$53 million of state money to build a crummy port in Oakland? This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Is the death penalty staying alive in Utah? Dan McKay on the right.
Establishment politics, limited government, free enterprise, individual liberty. Call me establishment. I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is both sides of the aisle. But first, this news. Natalie Gochner, this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are live at Capitol Hill. I'm joined on the left by State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi, Natalie. I'm live, too.
And on the right by Representative Dan McKay.
I'm mostly alive. Good morning, Natalie.
Good morning. And outside, maybe you'll hear it, maybe you won't, but we have some arts education, bands, orchestras, I don't know what all playing out there.
How dare they?
All I know is I walked into the Capitol and Jim was up there preaching like a preacher to the people about arts education. Jim, give us the spiel.
God, don't get me fired up.
You were down there with the crowd.
You know, it's so inspiring to go from that droll Senate floor with those, you know, talk about drone bills, and then to go down and watch those kids so excited and animated. It's inspiring.
Yeah, almost as animated as the Republican election appears to be, Jim and Dan. I mean, is this just something else?
Yeah, it was the same. It is the same crescendo that we heard just a few minutes ago with Jim's vivacious speech about the arts.
Yeah. We were talking right before we came on the air that the character trait most associated with Donald Trump supporters is authoritarianism. That didn't make me feel so great. Jim?
Look, I'm amused and I've enjoyed it, but a little bit what I'm most apprehensive about in life is coming to fruition. He's certainly going to get the nomination, and I'm afraid he's going to get elected president. That's what I'm afraid of, and I can see a couple of scenarios. One is if a bomb goes off or there's some kind of terrorist activity a week or two before the election, mm-hmm. and everybody goes, put their hands up, Donald Trump gets elected. Or you get those Reagan Democrats, like in Michigan, that apparently are saying in preposterously large numbers, I'm for Bernie. He won Michigan on the Democratic side.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't win, I'm certainly for Donald Trump.
I mean,
the country may be falling apart before our very eyes.
Your laughter at me over the last couple of months on this issue is now your pain. And that is that Michigan swing where Bernie wins Michigan and things are starting to pick up on that side, but the auto delegates are already locked in for Hillary or whatever. Yeah. You're going to have this weird situation. So they're all going to go Trump.
Yeah, the revolution is affecting both parties.
Yeah, yeah.
And right now they get to go to Bernie, but eventually they won't be able to.
And then you see what's scary. You see the sycophants fall. Did you see, there was Chris Christie, a normal, rational governor, sitting there giving that Nancy Reagan look to Donald Trump as he's saying the most preposterous things. And I can see a whole steamroller of normal people. This is red alert.
Now it's a problem? We've been saying, you've been laughing at us, and we've been saying it's a problem for at least 3 months.
I still want him to see him win the nomination.
Red alert, keep an eye. What both of you think? You think we're going to get the debate in Salt Lake City? There's a lot of talk right now that Trump will have the nomination locked up by then and won't participate in any more debates.
Is it
March 21st?
How about this? I think the only thing that will come out of the Mitt Romney speech presented up at the U, which, you know, he said many things that many of us were thinking.
Yeah.
The only thing that come out of it is Donald will say, Utah's not a friendly place for me. I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think the debate will happen.
And how about you, Jim?
Didn't the Mitt Romney speech didn't do a thing for anybody except the Hinckley Institute with that fabulous logo flashed around the world,
I'll tell you, everywhere, ABC News.
But look, Mitt is Mr. Establishment, and so he isn't going to turn any Trump voters.
He was trying to consolidate the rest of them. What an incredible opportunity for our students to be a part of history that morning. you know, to be there and watch this happen. And I did take a lot of satisfaction at seeing the University of Utah red all over the world in media coverage.
I did too.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, let's stay with Washington for just a minute longer. Senator Lee has been getting a lot of heat for his position on the Flint, Michigan money. He wants the state to cover the costs himself. He voted not or wants to obstruct the $220 million to fix the problem. Yikes.
Well,
to me, it strikes myself as a bit of a national disaster, even though it's in a city.
Okay, but how much, you know, everybody's always screaming about local control. Please let us make our own decisions. We want autonomy until we want your checkbook, right?
Yeah.
Our kids always want their own unrestricted access to whatever they want, but they don't until they want the check. And I'll just say, look, I applaud Senator Lee because a lot more local effort needs to be done because it is local failure to manage the problem. They knew these pipes were getting old. They knew this infrastructure was failing. And as a result, local effort was needed. And I think it's the right thing.
It reminds me of the difference between a feminine view on this and a masculine view. I know that it's not really gender, but just values. Jim's like, what in the heck is that? But, you know, I worked at EPA. I know what lead does to young children. And seeing what these people in Flint are up against, it reminds me of when Hurricane Katrina happened. That was a local failure, but the federal government had to come in and help with the mess.
Let's get back to Mike Lee.
Okay.
Because Crazy Mike Lee, with a 35% approval rating, went to the big establishment Republicans, who then jumped on board so he could get reelected. And that's exactly what happened. As soon as John Huntsman and Scott Anderson and the Raz jumped on and gave him the nod on the head, and they said, you know, we're going to keep him in check. We're going to keep him in control. We're going to keep him reasonable. Well, guess what? Now that he doesn't face anybody in the primary, Crazy Mike has reestablished himself. He's going to stand up solely in the United States Senate and completely ruin it. Suppose the big one hits Utah. It's coming, that big earthquake. I can see those senators from Michigan and from these other places saying, oh, yeah, Utah, how does it feel? Sorry.
Yeah, you didn't do this to your building codes or whatever. I don't know. Dan, I just think this one's a tricky one because it is a desperate situation in my judgment. It's water.
You are not kidding the fact that it is an emergency, right? And that's, and Senator Lee is saying, look, that's what rainy day funds are for, right, is to fix these kinds of emergencies. I would, and I think, and maybe he would say the same thing, some kind of local effort match.
Yeah.
Right.
Or have them pay this back.
Have them pay this back. Have it be a loan, that kind of thing.
That would be good leadership.
I could see that would be a smart way to move forward.
I don't know if this will take us very long, but I just want to talk for just a minute at the end of this first segment about Nancy Reagan passing away. Did either of you ever have any moments, memories with Nancy Reagan?
Well, I never met her.
I'm too young.
Too young. I'm the same. I don't know that I'm too young, but I did not have personal experience with her. She did exemplify a very loyal first lady to her husband. And I think she's getting a lot of praise for that as we honor her.
But that's right. I mean, you could tell those two that they loved each other, and that was good for America.
Yeah. And I noticed at the Capitol today the flag is at half staff.
Yeah.
So a good thing. Okay, well, in our next segment, we're going to talk about the legislative session. We're in the last few days of it. You guys have a lot of things going on. There's something you guys want to highlight for the second segment, Dan?
Boy, the budget is heated up. I think we're close, but we got a few more things that we're still trying
to
work out.
So we'll talk budget.
So that's big today.
Jim, how about you?
Rocky Mountain Power, one of the great Rocky Mountain ripoffs, Bill, which we need to talk about that. This port in Oakland, $53 million, that truly a terrific ripoff.
Let's talk about that because I have some thought. I have some insight on that.
And Dan, can we talk about Count My Vote? I'm guessing you are all over that.
I keep getting
my little report to the grapevine and they're like, yeah, Dan McKay's in the room with Gail Miller. And
Medicaid expansion
through it
as well.
Okay.
Let's talk about it all.
Very good. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the Political Center, joined by Representative Dan McKay on the right and Senator Jim DeBacchus on the left. Thank you.
This is Jim DeBacchus at the Capitol, proudly on the left.
Stan McKay standing to the right of Jim DeBacchus.
Natalie Gochner between the two. This is both sides of the aisle. We are in the last days of the legislative session, and I want to just go back to the budget. Dan, turn to you in the majority party. This transportation versus water. This is a big deal because legislatures don't often think long-term. I mean, they're better at being reactive, but when it comes to transportation and water, you've got to be thinking long-term.
Always.
You know, decades ahead. What's going to happen? Well, we've got to put aside some money.
So we've got money that goes into the Transportation Infrastructure Fund, the TIF. That money gets put away by a sales tax earmark, a bunch of earmarks. Natalie and I both love those earmarks.
Yeah.
No, we don't. But those earmarks then set away in a restricted account, and they're only used for transportation. There's a move by Senator Adams to put that money instead, not all of it, but some of it, $10 million this year. It's like $8.9 million, really, but $10 million this first year, and it will grow over time to invest in some of these long-term water projects that are out in front of us from an operation and maintenance standpoint, from some of these federal projects that we rely on. But the federal government is basically saying, we're not going to fund anymore.
Done. We used to be the beneficiary of a lot of federal money for water.
Yep.
Jim, I can kind of guess where you're going to come down on this, but I just want to say to our listeners that really what this is talking about is things like a Bear River development and Lake Powell pipeline. These are major public infrastructure projects to divert water to where the population is.
No, that's what they are refusing to say. They're not saying this is to fund the pipeline, the preposterous Lake Powell pipeline in St. George, or the Bear River, which is going to diversion, which is going to leave the Great Salt Lake bone dry. They are build, 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 develop, 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 not conserve, conserve, conserve. I mean, St. George and Washington County used four or five times the amount of water as Las Vegas, and the water people down there have kept it. They don't want to go to conservation because they got to make this case that we need these billions of dollars to pipe water from the from Lake Powell into St. George. It's just jimmied up, and until we conserve, we ought not to be spending a dime
on these
projects.
Economist on the program, I'll just say I want water infrastructure investment, and I want prices to rise. Let's go to another one. Rocky Mountain Power Bill. This, I believe, is passed the Senate, sitting over in the House. Is that right? SB 115.
This is, what are your thoughts?
This
on
is
it,
the
Jim?
One that pegs what Rocky Mountain Power electricity rates with the solar industry, the rooftop solar industry.
Yeah, that's part of it. But really, what's happened is Rocky Mountain Power does not want to use the Public Service Commission anymore on a lot of stuff because they know they're going to lose. And these are three people that are not exactly Jim DeBacchus consumer advocates. They're appointed by the governor. They don't like the decision of the PSC, so they've set up this Rube Goldberg thing to give those judgments to the legislature and 105 people that are doofuses when it comes to the intricacies of PSC policy. It is giant corporate Utah reaching out and crushing, really, the consumers because they are judge shopping. And there's been a lot of negotiation. You know who the negotiations are with? It's between the big power users in the state that are upset that they're going around them and Rocky Mountain Power. This is disgraceful. And you know who's going to end up paying for all of this? It is the Ma and Pa consumers because nobody's there at the table protecting them. To give PSC kind of authority to the legislature would be ugly.
Yeah. It makes a point, Dan. I mean, this is a natural monopoly. In economic terms, yeah, Rocky Mountain Power.
That's right.
And a natural monopoly doesn't have competition, so it has to have oversight. And the Public Service Commission is designed to do that. It seems to me like a legislative body is not the best example of a way to regulate a natural monopoly.
So if I were to summarize your statement, you'd say that not the most objective decisions are not necessarily made at the legislative level.
I would say that a part-time legislature should make broad policy decisions.
Accepting contributions from large.
I'm
just thinking of Jim's thing, right? Jim's. Okay. I know where Jim's going. He's saying, look, these guys, these 105 clowns, there's actually 104, but he's including the governor. So I'm just trying to channel my inner DeBacchus. These 105 clowns that really shouldn't be making these decisions. Sorry, I can't even do a good Jim. But, you know.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think the question really comes down to, where is the appropriate judgments to be made? And I, sadly, I actually think Jim is probably right on this.
Interesting.
And I can understand the problem, but I just don't know that I want to get in the middle of some of those fights because I'm just not sure that those fights have worked out well at this legislative level.
In the Senate, Jim, don't you have to approve any PSC commissioner that's appointed by the governor?
That is our say.
Like, yeah, that seems like an appropriate legislative
role
to me.
I mean, those Rocky Mountain Power's army, I don't know what they pay a lobbyist, 50, 100, 150,000, and there's armies of them, and they're there, and they hand out political contributions. I mean, it really is the sickest part of a sick corporate system. If this bill passes, it means bad, bad things.
Let's stay on the sick theme for just a minute. We have sick people in our state that need the help of medical marijuana. And I thought that was so stunning to see Senator Madsen basically say he's moving out of country. And he said it's unrelated to this, but at the same time, you could feel his angst.
But, I mean, that was a pretty strident comment.
It sure was.
I don't know that he would like to, you know, he may want to step back from that comment. But that being said, you know, it is, I think this is, I'll just talk dynamically about passing a bill. Once you work on something and put hours that he has put into the work, it is hard not to feel personal investment.
Yeah, and you've seen the people that suffer because you've interacted with the people that need this.
That's
and so, you feel wronged.
So I think he walked out of that committee feeling like, wronged. That's the best way to say it. It's that it didn't go the right way for those people, and he understands their plight. And so I think those comments were informed by his emotions at the time. Yeah. But these groups have been up here for 2 years, and we keep saying we need to study something more or do this more, which is the natural legislative technique. Where did you vote on that, Jim? What, you were okay with medical marijuana.
Yeah.
He's okay with recreational marijuana.
I mean, here's what I'm going to miss.
Heaven forbid people make their own health care decisions, but in case they want to, here's some weed.
Yeah.
We are going to miss Mark Madsen and Steve Urquhart. You know, I hope they're not replaced by PACs, you know, and I may be a hack, but I mean, those are two senators that have some flair, that have an open mind, that are willing to bring things up that are more controversial, out of the box kind of people. I'm really, really, really going to miss Senator Madsen and Senator Urquhart.
So
you're listening
this gets
to,
Well,
I was just going to say, help our listeners know they're listening to both sides of the aisle. Dan McKay, Jim DeBacchus, Natalie Gochner. We also want to hear from you. If you have a question, a comment, or a topic you'd like us to debate on this program, send an email to comments@kcpw.org. Dan, go ahead. I interrupted you.
I mean, you know, I have a drawing here that I figured I'd show my colleagues.
You know, it's radio, right?
Yeah, I know. Can you guys see this on the radio? But I, you know,
it has an R and a D on it. Yeah. I know what those are.
Everybody wants to talk about political spectrum, right? And it's a right and it's a left. I really don't actually believe that, getting to Senator Urquhart and Senator Madsen. I really think it's a circle, right, Jim? So there are several issues where you can draw the line cleanly and say, here's where the Republicans are and here the Democrats are. But on the far end of the Republican side and on the far end of the Democratic side, they meet and meet on several issues. And this medical marijuana, I think the bigger issue that they will meet on this year is the death penalty. Because that is, you guys have had this debate and you took a lot of floor time dedicated to that big issue.
And it passed the Senate.
And it passed the
Senate. Sitting over in the House.
It got out of a House committee. Not just the House committee, but the House Law Enforcement Committee.
Yeah.
So it got out of the House Law Enforcement Committee. Once it gets out of the House Law Enforcement Committee, now it's going to be debated on both bodies. And I'm not sure if it comes up tonight, if it comes up tomorrow. But I will tell you what, that is a debate where it's going to be interesting to see the other sides of these parties come together.
Do you give it a chance of passing, Dan?
I do.
I've
been public about this, saying I'm in favor of repealing the death penalty. And this is a moment of lucidity.
I would love to get the state out of the killing business.
Yeah. Well, you know, my quote, and it's probably a little flippant for how serious the issue is, but, you know, the quote that someone had for me the other day was, you know, look, we barely trust the government to fix our potholes. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to trust them with the execution of life. I don't love that.
You know, another interesting question that we've been debating is the relationship between parents and vaccinated children. We are declining in the number of children that are getting vaccinated, and there is a tipping point, apparently, that it doesn't just affect the unvaccinated, but it affects a lot of other children. And so yesterday in the Senate, the parental prerogative clearly triumphed over vaccinations. And I predict we're going to have less vaccinated children and there's going to be more outbreaks. And it's a sad day. There's time where the state goes, okay, you can have whatever beliefs you want, but we're going to protect your kids whether you like it or not. This is one of those cases.
Reminds
it's an easy
me,
call for me.
Yeah, it reminds me of the first thing you learn in a poli-psych class, and that is that your right to swing your fist ends where my nose begins. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're not vaccinating your kids and it starts to hurt people that aren't your kids, that's a problem. Dan's smiling at me. Yeah. Hey, I hate to do this because Jim always reminds us whenever we talk about count my vote, it's blah, blah, blah. Nobody can follow.
Well, it's interesting now.
But nobody can understand it, and that is true. It's been a very, very circuitous path. Dan, you are in a leadership role here. Just help our listeners understand where this stands at this moment. This is, of course, dealing with the caucus convention system to the ballot versus signatures to the ballot. The law of the land is that both work right now, but we got a judge that's messing around with it a bit.
Yeah, one of the core components for the House and for the Senate was when we came up with this compromise. Everybody can remember the compromise. The original Count My Vote initiative was no more caucus convention, straight to the ballot once you have 2% of signatures in your registered party.
Like most other states.
Like a lot of other states. I'm not going to say most. I'm going to say a lot.
Okay.
It's not really most, but Natalie and I disagree with most is. Draw a pie,
I just
and it's
I just
half
think of this
more,
as making Utah more like, you know, the mainstream.
Yeah, because we're doing really poorly right now financially and everything else. We probably need to be more like everyone else. But that being said,
go ahead. That's good. Okay. I want to let you speak.
So there's the compromise side of things where we said, look, we'll keep the caucus convention as a viable way for candidates to get on the ballot. As long as there's a high signature threshold. We wanted to incentivize behavior. Legislatures do this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And then if they didn't want to do that, then they could just have the signature path. Parties wanted to do it, so they chose the quantified political party status, keeping the caucus convention alive and having this high threshold.
The compromise is working.
Now, the judge is saying, and not a lot of people are going out to get signatures, but the people that are going to get them are successful.
He said not a lot. It's over 100 candidates.
Okay, so it's 100.
Okay.
Okay, so... Okay, how about this? Not a lot of Democrats.
Okay.
Okay. It's one side of the aisles here for this signature deal. But you got this signature path, and everybody's going out and getting their signatures, and people are being successful in collecting them. But the judge is saying, he's signaling right now that it's probably too high from a constitutional threshold standpoint. I completely disagree with him. I think he's wrong. I think the legislature can incentivize behavior. All of the cases his opinion relies on are parties being qualified to be a political party that can then put candidates on the ballot. So this whole signature threshold thing and all the case law that he's relying on is flawed. But that doesn't change anything because once the courts have spoken, we are stuck in a position where we have to do something. And that's where we were last Friday and everybody's saying, what are you going to do? And everybody's peppering me. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And so we eventually just decided, we spent time in the last couple of days trying to put it together and said, you know what? There's not really a compromise that can be reached. There's not really a position here. Let's let the courts decide. And that's kind of where we are.
Jim, I don't know if you want to add anything, and then we'll go to gripes.
20 seconds here. Look, this is an establishment wing of the GOP, kind of neither hot nor cold, getting spewed from the mouth, ending up with count my chaos. This is just the worst thing in history. It's an absolute anarchy. We ought to just do away with the whole caucus system, end it. Let's let people decide. Having candidates forced to pay $8,000 more to go collect names is going to make a few little companies rich, but it's not bringing out any more democracy.
Yeah, I would argue the race in and of itself is somewhat of an inhibitor for people like mass running. The problem with Jim's approach, Natalie, is if you've got 25 people, and that's hypothetical in the extreme, no question, but if you get 25 people on the ballot for the same office, someone's going to win with, you know, 10% of the vote or less, and they're going to be the party's nominee. And as a result, you know, there's some question as to whether or not the right candidate was able to put their head above water when you've got that many people to choose from.
Very good. Let's go to gripes. I have to tell you, sometimes when I hear Jim talk, I just start writing my gripe.
I am your gripe.
So I'm going to start, and I'm just going to say this. We only have a minute, but very quickly, Jim used the term establishment. People are using the term establishment like it's something really bad. If establishment means limited government, if it means limited government, free enterprise, individual liberty, I am establishment. I don't want to be a racist. I don't want to be unkind to women. I don't want to incite a trade war. I don't want to be a bully. I'm establishment. Jim, your gripe.
The port of Oakland, the state, this great bastion of capitalism, can't wait to go spend $53 million on a port there. And by the way, the guy on the CIB who arranged the whole thing, he's and his company, the Bank of Montreal, hundreds of thousands in commissions. This is ugly.
Ooh, that's bad. Dan, very quickly.
Dang it, I can't really speak about that. But I will say I'm bummed that the session's over Thursday night. I know that seems odd, but I get excited about where we're at. So
I love it. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Natalie Gochner, Dan McKay, Jim DeBacchus. The program's produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.